You are one hectic hondo, and I will always be your home slice. I get my tits out all the time. What's this about? Nobody expects the third arm.
This is a Standard Nerds podcast.
How'd you like me now?
Hello and welcome to How Do You Like Me Now, the podcast where we go back and relive the golden years of kids' TV. I'm Will, with me as always is Liz. Hello, Liz.
Let's get ready to crumble!
Okay.
Yeah?
I don't know what that reference is from.
What?
That let's get ready to crumble.
It's let's get ready to rumble.
Right.
But I'm always thinking about food. So I'm thinking of an apple crumble.
And I don't ever make you like an apple crumble.
No.
I've never made you any kind of crumble.
I don't think you've ever made me anything with an apple.
That's not true. I'm sure I've made you things with an apple before.
What, a sausage roll?
I've given you an apple. I've put some apple in a sausage roll.
I've given you an apple.
Yeah.
That is not making me something with apple. Why have you gone down this apple route?
I don't know. You're the one who raised crumble. Anyway, Liz, this week it's your pick.
Okay.
What are we watching?
Right. I want to pick something for a special reason. But I don't want to tell you the reason until later.
Okay.
Okay, so the show I want to pick is Sweet Valley High.
Okay.
Do you know this show?
I know of this show. I can't think of any images of it because I think I'm getting them mixed up with images of Saved by the Bell. So
it's got some similarities, I guess. It's a lot of it's set in a school.
There was a book
It's called Sweet Valley High, which is a school.
There was a book series as well, wasn't there?
It is a book. Yeah, it's from a book. It's about two twins.
Right.
Or a set of twins? How do you say that? It's not going to be about three twins. It's about twins who are blonde.
How many sets of twins?
Just one set of two twins. There's the two blonde girls.
Right.
I know one of them's called Elizabeth.
Okay.
Because that's my name.
Yes, it is.
So I remember that. She's the boring one because people think Elizabeth is a boring name, which always upset me. And the other one, I want to say she's better, but I think she's bitchier, but she's also cooler. So I was always annoyed that the other one's called Elizabeth, you know, the sort of square.
Right.
So I don't think either of them are likeable people.
Okay.
I don't think I enjoyed watching the show.
Okay.
But I remember watching it. I think my sister liked it. I think we watched it together. And I think it was, I don't know, as always with the American kind of high school genre, as a Brit, it's a kind of insight into this other world.
Right.
And for me, watching anything in a high school from America always seemed like, why do these adults go to school? You know, because everybody who's in it is about 20.
Yeah.
They all drive. They all have boyfriends that are like serious, that they're, you know, thinking about getting married to. So everything seems really adult when they're supposed to be kids. So I watched it, but yeah, I don't remember liking either of these two characters. And yeah, there is a little bit more to why I want to watch it, but I'm saving that until we've seen it.
All right. Well, in that case, I think we should go away and watch some Sweet Valley High.
Okay.
And we will report back. Duncan, I'm blind. And we're back. So, Liz, Sweet Valley High.
Rarely have I ever felt there was more to talk about than watching these two episodes. It's like being punched in the face by the 90s.
It is. This show is so 90s. It's practically scream. I mean, there's so many little things in here which are right from the get-go. I mean, you know, first thing I just want to talk about is the intro.
The intro. I wanted to talk about that, yeah. Okay, yeah, you go.
That is very, I mean, that is a very 90s graphic package. That is a lot of, like, tile videos swinging in, spinning round. There's, like, those weird wobbly bars of colour on, like, two sides of it.
Yes, like, when you first got a computer, you would put the image on and then it would offer you to put like a square of colour sitting underneath it.
Mm.
And then that would swoop in. It's all those like Windows Movie Maker effects.
Yeah, it's like a PowerPoint.
Swooping, spinning.
Star wipe.
And it does that thing of, showing you clips from all the episodes of like, here they are, you know, attending the prom, and here they are doing this, and
that's a very 90s thing. Don't see so much of that anymore.
The little clips to establish all the, I loved it. I loved it. And the song too, I did remember it. I don't know why. It's got something really memorable about this. It starts with a, and I don't know what that is supposed to be. And then I didn't write down the lyrics, but it's like, you see her standing there across a crowded room, and could there be two different girls who look the same? Yeah, they're twins. Of course they could. Yeah. Twins are not that unusual.
They do set it out there very clearly. One of them is like very popular. The other one is shy and quiet.
Yes.
Didn't seem that shy and quiet in what we saw.
They say shy and quiet, but what they really mean is kind of straight-laced.
Yes.
She's kind of, she wears the sensible clothes, she does well at school, mm-hmm. whereas that's Liz, you know, and then Jess is the kind of boy crazy
cheerleader
sexual one.
Okay, good. Glad you won. I don't know what you're going to add after sexual.
She's a sexual being.
Okay, I don't know why I thought you were going to say deviant. I was like, I don't know why I thought you were going to say that.
Well, we may get into that. We may get into that later.
But I mean, they are waste. I mean, there's some classic 90s names just in the actors. So I mean, Brock Burnett is, I mean, Brock is such a 90s name.
That's a good name.
No one's called Brock anymore.
I am a fan of an alliterative name as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good
a good alliterative name.
Yeah, so the twins in the show, they're called Jessica and Elizabeth, Jess and Liz, but they're played by Brittany Daniel or Daniels?
Daniel, I think.
And Cynthia.
Daniel.
Really,
Daniel. Same twins.
They're twins, yes. And although they may be adults, they're not married at this stage.
Yeah, this is the
thing. They haven't changed their name for any reason. Actually, they're only 18 when this first series is out.
See, now this is the thing. This first series, I was like, okay, a fair few of the people in here, including the twins, can pass for 18. They can pass for high school.
Yeah.
There are quite a few people in there who most definitely cannot. There are a few people in there who look as old as the bald principal. Right? There's few people to whom the years have not been kind.
Yes, that is fair to say. I mean, the thing is with these school shows, and I've said it before, is they cast people who are just slightly older. I guess it's easier with their schedules or, you know, whatever.
Labour laws, that kind of thing.
But it gives you this impression, watching it, that you're watching adults. But it's called Sweet Valley High, therefore it's a high school.
Yeah.
High school, I think, roughly goes up to 18, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So, and this is the thing that confuses me. You're casting two people here. They look 18. They don't look younger than 18, right?
No, they don't
look 15. Right, I think 15, 16 well, you should. The thing is, because you want this to run for a few years, you should aim to have them look about 15, 16 at the start, right? Even if they're older, they should look about 15, 16. They shouldn't look like they're just about to finish.
Now, I have to say to you, we're going to get into the plot of this, but would you want them to look 15, having seen what this episode is?
No.
No.
No. I don't feel this a lot of this episode should have happened at all.
So the first episode we watched was actually not series one, episode one, because we usually try and do that. But in this case, I made a special request that we start with Series 1, Episode 3, because it was one that I had watched and stuck out in my mind, and I remembered almost every aspect of what I'm going to term the A-plot,
okay,
which involves Jessica in this case.
Yes.
There is a subplot with Liz, but it was the A-plot with Jessica that I remembered everything about what happens here. This made a big impression on me as a kid. I did remember some of the actors from, because some of the actors actually change, who, you know, the character is played by a different person.
Oh, right, okay.
You didn't spot that?
No. No, okay. I didn't. did not spot that at all.
Because we just watched that.
Yep,
did. So that wasn't me revealing that to you.
No, did not spot that at all.
Okay, whatever. And I did recognise the other lot, so I guess I must have kept watching it, but yeah. So let's stop teasing people and say what this episode is about. Because we're introduced straight away to Dakota Dancer, which is a completely normal name that anyone could be called Dakota Dancer.
That's the worst name I've ever heard.
And he is an artist. And so he has long hair.
Yes.
And is frequently covered in paint.
He's enigmatic. He doesn't say much. He doesn't look at people.
Right, yeah. This is the thing. They say, oh, Dakota Dancer is so hot. Jess is admiring him right at the start. And it is purely a looks thing because they don't try and establish almost any personality whatsoever.
No.
He has hardly any lines in this.
No, it's just to give him that sense of being aloof. You know, they say keep saying he's creative. Creative guys are so hot. Everything's hot in this.
Everything's hot, yeah. And also, I don't understand whether he is a student. Because they're talking about him like he's a renowned artist.
Yeah.
But he looks like he could be about the same age.
Yeah.
So is he a student?
Well, I assumed he was a student. Like, a student that they're very proud of. And this is the thing of, like, you know, they let him do his own thing a bit. I assumed he was a student up until later on.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Because what they are talking about here is there's going to be a big art show on the Friday, okay?
Yes.
This is such a classic thing, isn't it? Oh, the big art show's coming on Friday. Remember when you were at school and you were excited because the big art show was
always,
on Friday?
Always.
Yeah.
Okay. It was a must-go event. Everyone had to be there.
And Jess is hanging out with her friends, but she is kind of pissed off that he is hanging out with a girl called Enid.
Yes.
Again, great name.
Great name, really due for a comeback.
You know, I was at school in the 90s and there were so many Enids. We were lousy with them.
See, I didn't have an Enid at my school. Did have three Dakotas, though.
Yeah, sure. Okay, yeah. Enid is Liz's friend, the other twin. So she, again, is a more straight-laced type. And, she, you know, when I say straight-laced, I don't know what else to say to you. They're wearing brown. They're wearing all neutrals. That's the only way I can establish it to the audience.
A lot of beige.
Beige, they're very beige. So Dakota Dancer has formed some kind of bond with Enid where she's his muse.
Yes.
And he's got the big art show coming up, so he's going to paint her.
Yes, he is. Jess decides that, because she finds Dakota Dancer so hot,
yeah,
she must become his muse and be painted by him, because then she'll be famous.
Yes, this is another thing that I don't quite understand. She's worried that he's going to make Enid famous, and she wants that instead for her. Because, of course, high school students who are becoming big in the art world, the people in their paintings become world-renowned.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
So, you know, how many people are famous just because of that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's exactly.
Yeah, that's a weird concept. But anyway,
no one bothers looking at the signature in the bottom corner. It's just, hey, look at that person.
Look at that person, yeah.
Didn't they do such a good job being in that painting?
And she gets a plan in her head, which she doesn't reveal to us straight away, but we know that she does because she does some amazing eyebrow work. She raises that eyebrow so far. I wish I could do that. This is how she got cast as the sexy twin. purely on the one raised eyebrow work.
You think they went in one at a time? Like, how high can you raise that eyebrow? Not right. Okay, you're playing Liz. That eyebrow's not gone high at all.
If you look at these two women, they are identical, but it is clear that one of them is the sexy one and one of them is the boring one. Even though they have identical faces.
They do have identical faces and
but
identical
hair. But that's
purely
based on eyebrow work, I think.
Really? I mean, that's narrowing it down quite a lot, which is, I like that. I mean,
tell me you disagree.
No, I don't think I do.
Saw that eyebrow.
I think the costume department has an element of this as well. And also, they have given Jess an open-top Jeep, which, you know, is just the sexiest car in the world.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Really?
For the 90s, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, in the 80s, it was the DeLorean. In the 90s, it was the open-top red Jeep.
I feel like that is the sort of car that you see at the beginning of a music video and they're like, come on, we're all going to the beach. And then they all hang out in the back, they're all waving their arms. And
any film in which there's a surfing sequence, you'll see that Jeep.
Yeah.
Yep, doesn't matter what it is. There'll always be, and there'll be two people, there'll be two guys in the front, there'll be two girls wearing bikini tops in the back going, woo, as it drives along down the strip.
I definitely think there'll be wooing in
there. Yeah,
that.
There's a lot of wooing involved with that
Jess
kind of car.
Would woo as well.
She definitely would woo. But I do want to talk. So they've gone into Dakota. She goes into Dakota's, into the art room where Dakota's doing some work.
Yes.
Enid turns up and is like, hey, Dakota. Oh, that's great. He's like, it's just a colour test, whatever. And while he's...
Yeah, he seems like a dick. He doesn't seem
that
sexy.
He does seem like a dick.
No.
But, I mean, this is the thing. Like, it's a question I had. Looking in that art room, at the other students' artwork they've got on the back, on the walls, bearing in mind this is a high school as well, that artwork is unbelievably shit.
It is. It's very, very bad.
Really, really shit. Like, are they so impressed with his artwork because everyone else's is so bad by comparison?
Yeah, I think that is the point, because they're really bigging this guy up, and we have to believe that he's some good. And to do that, they've just put everybody else at such a low level. Everybody else is like finger painting, and they're just saying, this guy is great, he can hold a brush. But I remember this scene because Jess goes in and she kind of reclines sexily on the furniture and is like, hey, Dakota, and trying to get him to notice her. And he just, you know, blanks her. He's not interested.
Yeah.
And I remember this so well because this, I don't know, it made such an impression on me because she's like, do you want to paint me or whatever she says, like one of your French girls. She doesn't quite go there. But she's like trying to get in with him and he's just like, clean my brushes. And it's like, honestly, I'm like 9 years old watching this going, oh, what a diss. Oh, no. He's like totally, oh, my God, I can't believe that.
That is unreal.
That is unreal. Look what he's done. And he likes the boring one better. Like, he's chatting with Enid, even though she embarrasses herself by saying that's so good. And he's like, it's a colour test. He likes her better. And I think... Even at a very young age, I knew I was going to be one of the boring ones. I knew I wasn't going to be a femme fatale reclining on furniture. I knew I was going to be wearing beige and going, oh my God, that's so cool. It's like really good. Oh no, is it colour test? Oh, I knew that. I think I knew that was pretty much my
that's
thing.
That was going to be your shtick.
So the fact that he was more interested in a girl called Enid who wears beige was, I'm there for it. I'm there for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, even to the point, he said to Enid, oh, meet me here, you know.
Yes.
And
so,
wear something comfortable.
This is all he says to her, is dress comfortable. And then he arranges the time that he's going to paint her.
Mm.
And Jess, because she's in the room, overhears this.
Yes.
And again, eyebrow work to let us know that she's got a plan. This is so exciting to me. Okay. Yeah. So she goes to find Enid.
Yes.
And Enid's hanging out, having a milkshake. Again, so American to me.
Oh, this is
I never hung out and had a milkshake when I was that age. I still don't know if I have, like...
Like, I wonder where all those, like, tropes about American high schools have come from. They've all come from this.
Well, this is very, very tropey. And I mean, the look of Jess's friends is like, okay, you have to have the pretty blonde white girl front and center, and then her friends, her sidekicks, one of them is going to be a kind of sassy black friend,
yeah,
and one of them's going to be a bitchy or gossipy
redhead. Yeah.
And that is the exact dynamic we have here, and I don't know how many times you've seen that, but it is amazing, isn't it, that we all just watch that and go, yeah, obviously the blonde girl's always going to be front and center, I'll just watch that.
Like, and those two friends, that's exactly it. Every woman has those two friends.
I know.
Every woman falls
that.
Into one of those three people.
So weird, isn't it?
It is.
Especially when I have red hair and you think, oh no, I'm not even the main character in my own life.
Oh no.
And also my sassy black friend is just a white guy called Nick.
But he is very sassy.
Well, that's true. Anyway.
Anyway, Jess puts her plan into motion by telling Enid, oh no, he wants to paint you naked.
Yeah.
You will be humiliated
because he's going to paint you naked. You can't possibly do this. And Enid, who had previously like thought, oh, she's just trying to take my place, is so grateful for this, you know, warning.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, thank God you told me. Oh my goodness. You know, I really misjudged you, Jess.
Yeah.
Now, I realise how you were doing it for the good of me.
And that's it. And now we're on the path to Jess getting her comeuppance.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Which is weird for your two main characters for you to want one to have their comeuppance.
Yeah.
It's like, they don't explicitly say there's an evil twin. But they want the, like, a sexually liberated one to be an evil twin.
Yes.
They want that. Although she's not that sexually liberated. But anyway, so she tricks Enid into not going to this time and place to meet Dakota Dancer, famous artist. And she goes herself.
Yes, she does. And she goes in a quite form-fitting black dress.
Yes.
She...
With a front zip.
With a front zip, which is always a danger sign.
I cannot tell you what the front zip does in my mind.
No,
it's
no,
like,
you've got to.
Well, I will, but I think it's on, is what I would say. Like, the second she arrives there, you're like, oh, damn.
It's going down.
It's going down. Because, so she goes and says to him, oh, Enid can't make it or whatever. He's not that bothered.
No.
And she undoes her front zip.
Yep.
And is in a leopard print bikini.
Yes.
And I don't want to say what age we're supposed to think this girl is, because what follows is kind of like a photo shoot.
Yeah, she starts doing all these photo shoot poses. Like, she does get the difference between a camera and a paintbrush, right?
And
how quickly does she think he can paint?
Well, she's trying to get into a pose that will make him happy. And I understand why you don't get that, because that actor gives you nothing.
Yeah.
This is why he has no dialogue. He can't act. He's just there to be a long-haired sexy man. And so we get lots of different poses, as though it was a photo shoot. We get lots of close-ups of her breasts, of her body. She's a very attractive woman. And she's enjoying the attention.
Oh, yeah.
But she is supposed to be... really quite young, a teenage girl.
Yes. Yeah, it's meant, when you look deeply enough, you go, nah, this isn't right. This isn't right here. Because, yeah, just not okay.
He eventually gets her reclining on the ground, and she says to him, are you sure you don't want to see it another way?
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, damn. Oh, damn. Same way I felt when I saw that front zip. I'm like, oh, damn. Yeah, so she does this pose for him, and he paints her, and...
They do a weird video effect on this bit, where,
right,
like, the video starts going, and this isn't, like, I don't think this is a thing of, like, the recording. The video starts going choppy, like it is, like, a photo shoot. Like, you know when you see a photo shoot in, like, 90s, like, American TV?
Yeah.
They do that whole thing where it's, like, and it's all the frames start, like, freezing, and you get one, like, and then another. Like they're taking loads of photos.
Yeah.
So they do that, but he's just painting. So all it looks like is just they've, like, put slow motion on the video and doing step by step. Like, through the frames.
Yeah, I guess they didn't know how to show the passage of time for a painting rather than a photo shoot.
I mean, you can just do, like, a star wipe, like they've done at the intro, you know?
Star wipe!
I never thought
I'd hear you advocate for a star wipe.
I mean, I'm just saying, it seems on brand for this show.
It does, yeah.
But, I mean, I love this afterwards. She goes, like... after he's done and he packs the painting away before she can see it, she goes, I don't know how Cindy Crawford does this. She doesn't pose for paintings. This woman does not understand the difference between painting and photography.
No, that is very true. She's definitely, she's got it in her head.
What
she's
a daring model. Indictment of the school that she goes to.
But again, also proves my point that people who pose for paintings do not get famous on that basis, because they couldn't think of anyone to put in there. So they were like, well, we made it look like a photo shoot. We might as well say just a model name. People will understand that.
Oh, my goodness me. So then we're back at the school and they're talking about the art show coming up. It's announced that Enid is boycotting the show because of Dakota Dancer and his filthy, disgusting mind wanting to see her naked.
Yes, you missed a scene, actually. We first went to the mall, where she told them about it, and she was, like, telling them, oh, he was rubbing coconut oil into me, and it was so hot, your curling iron hasn't seen this kind of heat. So she's bigging it up, what went down, and we saw she was just laying there in a leopard print bikini to a fairly cold audience. Yeah, then we go to the show.
Yeah.
And the...
Well, no, they do an unveiling of this painting in the school.
Oh, yes, there's a special unveiling of this particular one.
Yes.
This isn't the final art show. And, yeah, we're getting all the chatter of the crowd.
Now, can I say, this is the point at which I started to doubt that Dakota Dancer was a high school student.
Right.
Because up till now, we've seen him in, like, a painter's smock and, like, a trench coat. And now we're seeing him just in a vest. And this man is covered in prison tattoos. Now, I don't know many high schoolers that are covered in prison tattoos.
Yeah.
But this one definitely is, which makes me think he's not really a student.
No. I also wonder that. I really do wonder. Because if he is just a local artist, the fact that they let him in the school and allowed him to ask female students to pose for him. That's really, really not great.
Yeah, and then when he unveils the painting of Jess...
Well, just before that, there's some chatter, isn't there, between the crowd. And, like, Jess is all proud of being in the painting. She's going to make a speech, inexplicably.
Yeah.
And there's just one moment that I wanted to draw to your attention, which is Liz is with her boyfriend, Todd.
Right.
And he says to her... They're saying, oh, you know, her face is going to be famous because it's going to be all around. And he says to her, your face too, kind of. And it's like, no, Todd, right? We're different people. And it just occurred to me at that point, that's the exact excuse that he would offer for having a go on her sister.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I thought she was you. You look so similar.
Yes. Yeah. Did you know that one of my sister, who is not my twin sister, one of her ex-boyfriends once put his arm round my waist?
What?
When we were out.
What?
And me and my sister look alike, as in there's a family resemblance, but we're by no means twins. And he was mortified. There was nothing going on. But it just struck me, I was like, Do we look alike? You know, like, how could you make that mistake?
She does know this happened.
She knows this happened.
Okay, good. You're not revealing this for the first time on a podcast.
No. He was mortified. Oh, my God, it was so funny. I laughed for a long time. I'm still laughing now, really. I am.
Oh, amazing. So they reveal the painting. And there's big gasps.
Oh, there are gasps.
But you don't see the painting.
We do not see it. The audience does not see it.
But all we find out is that in this, Jess is painted naked.
Now, what were you expecting? Is that what you were expecting?
No, I was expecting, because he says this is like, you know, a comment on Sweet Valley High and this kind of thing. And because he seems quite cynical, I was expecting it to be like a toxic wasteland or for it to be her in the like leopard print bikini with like a devil head or something.
I thought... when I was a kid, and I still remember thinking this, that it was going to be a grotesque image of, like, a twisted face, or, you know, like a demon, a grey-headed, you know, some sort of weird demonic representation, or, like, a kind of, you know, like a kind of Picasso thing, where you just cannot recognise that it's her.
Yeah,
and absolutely. She'd be disappointed because she wants her face to be famous, and you'd be looking at it going, well, whose face is that, you know? But... They reveal by just saying, oh, she's naked. And I was like, I don't know. It's just, it's so weird to me that they do this plot line with children.
This is the thing. It's like, well, these are supposed to be children. Well, they look like adults, but they're supposed to be children.
And I just think about Todd again. Because he's thinking, oh, I've just told my girlfriend that because it's her twin's face in it, her twin is also in it. And then he sees an entirely naked woman and he's like, oh, I should not have said that.
I don't think Todd's that self-aware.
No, probably not. I've given him far too much credit. But anyway.
I love this bit, though, because they say she's naked. And then one guy who is like the school photographer just goes, bravo, and starts clapping.
He loves it.
Oh, God. I mean, it's just... Oh, and then, like, afterwards, they're all talking about it afterwards, and someone says, do you think it was anatomically correct?
I don't know what that means. It's like, do you know what a woman looks like naked? Because what were you expecting to see? What did you see on that? Because we don't see it as an audience.
No.
And I think that's correct for a children's show. But what did he see on that that he didn't think was anatomically correct?
I didn't expect to have the third arm coming out of her chest.
Well, but nobody expects the third arm.
Here is the other question I've got, right?
Yeah.
Jess sets this whole thing up
with
Enid. He says, Dakota's going to paint you naked.
Yeah.
Because she makes this up, and then Dakota actually paints Jess naked. Now, is this because there's an unseen scene where Dakota is confronted by Enid, and he goes, no, I wasn't going to do that, but I'm going to get my own back on Jess? Or was his plan all along to paint Enid naked?
Now, I don't think so. And I will explain to you why. And I thought this was explained in a scene in this show, but it wasn't. And I must have analysed this so many times in my mind that I created this scene. But I thought it was because she was such a sexual being that he painted her naked, and that's how he justified it to himself, and that because he didn't see Enid in that way, he never would have painted her like that.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I thought that scene was in this show, but it did not appear to be.
You've created that in your mind.
Can I just say, though, that it is totally normal, not maybe 16-year-old girls, but for people to be painted naked. But the reaction to it is so extreme. They say to her, her own friends are saying she has no shame, that that's exactly the kind of thing she would do. And it's clear they think this is a terrible thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't. If somebody said to me, I pose naked for a picture, I'd be like, okay. Like, well, for you know.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, I'd be okay with it, whatever. It's not my business. But but they're reacting to it like, it's the worst thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, it is terribly shaming for something which, yeah, it's fairly commonplace. People go and pose for life drawing classes all the time.
Yeah.
People pose naked for people all the time. It's just a thing that happens. You shouldn't be castigating this woman for it.
All of her
friends. Practically stoning her to death in the mall.
Yeah, exactly. All of her friends turn against her.
Yeah.
They are so against it.
Even her sister turns against
her. Even her sister doesn't believe her when she says, but you know, I was wearing a bathing costume. And she's in her Jeep and she has these tears painted on her face because that actress did not cry for that. All right. That actress is thinking, why are they all reacting like this? I get my tits out all the time. What's this about? Right. She did not cry for that scene. They painted those tears on and she goes, but I had a bathing suit on. You have to believe me. And her own sister is like, did you really though?
I would argue though, it's hard. It would be hard to conjure up some tears when you're saying to your sister, don't you believe me? And your sister is saying something like, but Jess, there are 50 creeps on the answer machine asking for dates.
Oh yeah, that as well. I love that.
Where did they get your number?
Right, no. Well, we all used to be in the book, remember?
Yes, that's true.
Because it's clearly not a mobile phone and not Jess's private line, because why would Liz know about it? So this is their home phone.
This is presumably the day after this painting has been unveiled to a room filled with 15 people max.
But also,
and 50 people have already been on the phone.
But also, Will, right, look at that actress. What did those people see in that painting that they couldn't tell about her with her clothes on? Right? This is a hot woman. She has big tits, right? What? She's blonde. She has big tits. She's hot. What did you see in that painting, right, that you didn't already know? What made you go, yeah, I really should call her and ask if she wants to go out? Was it, am I supposed to believe that they saw that she posed for a nude painting and they thought, well, that means she's up for it. She is promiscuous. If she's willing to take her clothes off for a painting, she'll definitely sleep with me. Is that what I'm supposed to believe?
See,
because I don't, and I won't have it.
No, and the thing is, I don't even think those people would have seen that painting. They'll just heard that she was painted naked in a painting, gone, yep, definitely, that's the kind of girl I want to date.
See, if... yeah, okay. But if they were all phoning up saying, I'm a local artist and I would like to paint you, I'd believe it. As that's the kind of scam that a guy will pull. But the idea that they've all just gone, you know what, I really should ask her out, because if she gets them out for a painting, well, you know, what is she going to do on a date? Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Anyway.
If I turn up with a piece of scrap paper and a pencil or an Etch-a-Sketch...
Oh my goodness, Etch-a-Sketch art. That is the perfect way to represent a woman that you want to sleep with. But Liz comes up with a plan to help her.
Yes.
Which is the old secret tape recorder.
Yeah, the old secret dictaphone.
So she goes up to Dakota and says to him, but she was never naked. And he says, well, she didn't have to be.
Yeah, he goes,
I think that's the line I've extrapolated from.
Yes, it's basically.
He says she didn't have to be. So in my mind, that was like, oh, okay, I see. He's an artist. He sees her as a sexual being. Therefore, that's what he represented. Not, you know, he screwed her over because he didn't like her.
Yeah. Ethically, he should have said, FYI, I'm going to paint you nude. Is that okay?
Ethically, he should have said, are you over 18?
Yes, ethically, he should have said that. He should have asked himself, is he over 18? What's... This kind of behaviour might be acceptable in the prison you came from, Dakota Dancer, if that is your real name and not some kind of pseudonym now you're out on the lam. Right? I bet you can find him without that hair. That hair's wig, by the way, and you can find him without that hair on America's Most Wanted.
Quite possibly. It does look like
a That wig. Would be a better resolution for this episode, rather than this whole tricking with a tape recorder and everything else that follows after. If actually turns out he's actually an on-the-run prisoner in disguise, and this whole thing is like, don't just trust people on face value, because, you know, anything could happen.
Anything could happen. Well, because they get him on tape, all the friends come round and they all apologise to Jess, apart from the ginger friend, because she's really bitchy. And
she just pretends that
she pretends she never believed it, which, you know, that's your classic frenemy. Didn't have that word then, I don't think. We could have used it. But anyway, so they hatch a plan to get Jess to lure him out to the beach.
Yes.
I told you that car's for beaches. Anyway, so
that's a weird beach, because it's a beach next to a pond.
I don't think there was a beach. And so, yeah, it's just a sandy patch next to a sort of small boating lake, yes. Maybe. Yeah. So anyway, they go out to that and she tricks him into thinking they're gonna skinny dip.
Yes.
She's wearing a pinstripe outfit. It's like a two-piece, like it's like a waistcoat, isn't it? Like a waistcoat top,
yes.
But very, very sexy.
Yes, again, and a very 90s piece of clothing.
And a skirt and long white socks. It's a confusing mashup.
It is a confusing mashup of 90s fashions.
Of sexy and childlike. Don't like it.
No.
But
I think, again, this is a sad choice the programme makers to go, we need her, she's sexy, she's got to be sexy, but she's also at school, so she's got to be schooly. Let's just slam those two things together. She's too sexy, put her in some long socks. No, she's too schooly, put her in a tight top.
Yes, that's exactly it, actually. He hasn't bothered to look sexy.
No.
We're just supposed to accept that this, because this guy has got long hair and is into art, that we're going to want to have sex with him.
Yeah.
He is wearing very loose stonewashed dungarees.
Well, again, it's a very 90s look, Liz.
And this... he pulls them off, like, he gets his own, like, photo shoot bit here. Because she says we're going to skinny dip, and then she says she's going to a car to get towels. And so we watch him get naked, right?
Well, we watch him spend 30 seconds unlacing his boots.
There's a lot of unlacing of the boots.
Like, put him in some different shoes.
She reveals, obviously, that it was all a trick. She's there with all the friends, and they take photographs of him.
Yes, naked.
Actually naked.
Yeah.
And he has to use his boots, plural, to cover his modesty.
Yes.
Which,
again, very 90s term for it.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. I think in the 90s a lot of people were saying the penis. They're like, oh, that's a modesty.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was a thing.
So...
there's a bit of blackmail. There's
a bit of blackmail. Say, take the painting out, whatever, of the show. Don't show any more people. Get rid of it. And he, even though he's an artist, is like, he's mortified at the idea that someone will have a photograph of his penis. Which, are people this bothered about? Maybe they are that bothered about.
I presume he is, because again, he's a grown adult at a school, Liz. Right? And this is evidence he basically exposed himself to a minor. That's him back inside for another 20 years.
That's
right?
True.
That's his third strike. He's going away.
That is true. That is true. Right.
So at the end of it, he agrees to basically to cover her up and paint the bikini back on. And so the painting goes back in the art show. And this point is when they actually reveal this painting.
Yeah.
And I mean, I want to get your views, because this is an episode you picked and you remember. Did you remember this painting?
I remembered what the painting is showing, as in that it is now her with the leopard bikini on.
Mm-hmm.
I did not remember it to be one of the worst paintings I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's her, it's not her.
It could be any blonde woman.
It looks like a vampire.
It's
reclining at an awkward angle.
Yes.
On a beach.
Whoever in the art department, right, had to knock that up. They did not tell them that she was going to be reclining, because they obviously went, oh God, I can't do that pose. What the hell?
Well, they did not tell her what she looked like.
No, Liz. That's true.
They didn't tell this person, this is a photo of her, which would have been much more helpful to her to go, she's blonde, yeah, all right, or some vague approximate. It's appalling.
I don't think they'd ever painted a person before.
And this painting is going on tour. It's going on tour nationally.
It really needed to be a better painting in order for us to believe that this guy is an artist.
I can only hope it's going on tour to have fruit thrown at it, because it's shit. No one's going to go and see that. What the hell is that?
It is shit. It really is.
Oh, yeah, my God. It's,
the painting is way worse. I didn't remember it. Which is to say that it was sufficiently good to trick my child's brain. I wanted to talk about that plot because, as I said, that was the one I remembered. And you remember me saying at the beginning I had a specific reason.
Yes.
For choosing this episode.
Yeah.
But I haven't yet revealed that to
okay,
you.
Okay, reveal. Reveal your special reason.
I had my first sexual experience.
Whoa, okay.
About this.
Really?
I became a woman. Because of this Sweet Valley High episode.
This is not what I was expecting you to say at all.
What did you expect me to say?
I don't know.
I'll be fair, nobody really expects you to reveal this. I could say, you actually look embarrassed for me. But I'm okay sharing things with the listeners. I mean, possibly the people that I know who listen to this won't be okay that I've just shared that. But I genuinely, this did something for me. And looking back on it now, that's not a great thing because the sexual politics of this are a minefield. But although, like, Jess is not that sympathetic a character, I was, I think, really just amazed by any female character actually going out and getting what they wanted. This guy is not interested in her at all, but she makes the moves on him. And I loved it. I really loved it.
Yeah.
The fact that she is so confident in her body that she does that session for him where she's like, do you want me like this? Do you want me like this? And she never, ever gets down on herself about the fact that he's not going for it. You know, she's just like, she knows she's hot.
Yeah.
And I mean, she is, but she really knows she's hot. And she doesn't care that everybody knows that she knows.
No, yeah, she's oozing with body confidence and positivity. And she knows, yeah, she's just, yeah, I can see that.
The scene where she's in the leopard skin bikini
mm-hmm.
and he just paints her, right? That scene to me was like a jumping off point.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
I'm saying, when, I don't know if you do this. I don't know if men in general do this, but where you watch something on TV and it's just got kind of the seed of something horny in it.
Mm.
And so you take it and you put it in your mind and you're like, where could that have gone that would please me more? What, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know what you're saying.
Do men do this?
I think so. I think to a degree there's this sense of...
I think you're a liar and I want an example.
What? No. No.
Because to me...
You feel free to reveal your sexual experiences on the podcast. I'm going to keep mine to myself.
When I say sexual experience, I mean that I was alone. I was a lonely child watching this and realising that sex was a thing that was interesting to me. And I just think a lot of media that you consume is like, I don't know, is stored away, like in your sexual fantasy, your wank bank, if I may use that. And I genuinely, right, I've remembered this episode for, what is it, like 20 years, purely because it was kind of like, I don't know, it was the start of something. I feel like this may not be true right. of everyone, but a lot of women, their sexual fantasies, right, would fill a library, like in Beauty and the Beast. You know, you can swing around the racks and go to anywhere and any point in your life. There's loads of it. Whereas men's is like a Panini sticker book.
It's a very...
It's like it's all like, the tits I've seen.
It's a grotty Panini sticker book.
Yes.
In like it's a very lit room.
Very well thumbed. And I know you've got a shiny in there for my lean class.
It's a well-thumbed sticker album in like a poorly lit room, locked in a desk drawer, underneath some other stuff. That's where it is.
I have entire. This is only a couple of pages on the shelves. I have entire racks from other TV shows. But yeah, it's a whole realm. I've told you before that I had I had one kind of relationship in my fantasy life that I had to end because it was getting boring. I had to break up with my fantasy sexual partner because we were at the point where I was, oh, we've just done everything now.
I find that astounding. I find that actually astounding that in your own fantasy life, in your fantasy life, you're like, she's getting a bit tired now.
It's just, you know, it has to be realistic to me. And he just didn't, you know, he just didn't do it for me anymore. You know, we'd done all the things that I wanted to do. We'd reached all the, like life points that I wanted to with him. And so I had to just retire him.
Right. See, now, this is the thing that's mad to me, okay? Because I think, you know, I can understand completely people tire of a fantasy, you know?
Yeah.
And your tastes change and everything else. But I think of that as, like, tire of that fantasy. Boom, done. That's it. That's gone. You know, on the next. Not, I must have a sit down and talk with my fantasy.
No, I didn't sit down and talk to him.
But a conscious, like, uncoupling of you and your fantasy.
It was a conscious uncoupling.
Oh my God!
It was like, do you know what? I just don't think this is working out anymore. Like, I'm going to pick up that book on the shelf. I'm thumbing through all the favourite parts that I had, but they're just not bringing me the joy. And so I'm going to put it on the shelf, and it's still there. There may come a time where I want to revisit it. I want to check those books back out. But at the moment, I need to search for new volumes.
See, and this is why sometimes you want something a bit quicker. That's why you just flick through the Panini album instead. Yeah. Yep. Amazing. Amazing.
Does that change anything about your viewing of this episode? Or anything about your viewing of your wife?
A little bit, but no, not in a bad thing at all. I think. Wow. Okay, I'm just learning new things about you, which makes me happy to do.
I love to share.
Yes,
I love to share.
Okay. Oh my God. Okay. Right. Speaking of feelings, though, I want to talk about the second episode.
The second episode, okay, was just pure joy to me. Every second of it, because it's got a bit weirder, hasn't it? By this, this is the third series.
Right. Okay.
And it's a bit more, I don't know, surreal.
It's very weird. I mean, first things first, by this point, no one looks like they should be at school.
No, that's fair.
No one looks like they should be at school. This is, you know, everyone is way past graduating. There's a new character we've met who might be my favourite character from this of all time.
Yes.
Reggie.
Shred.
I believe they called him Reggie.
His name is Reginald, but his nickname is Shred.
Okay, no one called him Shred.
He calls himself Shred. He says Casa de Shred.
Because he's a massive loser.
He
is a massive loser.
He, right, so he is that stoner,
yep,
90s character. There's way too many rules, man. He's that guy.
Yeah.
And he is doing that, turned up to 11. He's absolutely doing that on full volume.
I mean, he is like, it's like a combination of Bill and Ted,
yep,
Sean Penn from Fast Times at Ridgemont High,
yes,
Matthew Lillard from Hackers, right, you know, like Matthew Lillard and Scooby-Doo, right? And Shaggy, yes, from Scooby-Doo. It, yeah, is so many things. I mean, from the fashions, he's permanently wearing a hat. He's got like the dirty blonde long hair. He constantly says, dude.
I wrote down nearly every line of his dialogue, yeah, because they were all hilarious to me.
Bit of background. So, Todd has a beeper now.
Yes.
Again, very 90s again.
Right, this is where I didn't understand that you didn't realise some of the actors have changed. Because that's Todd.
Right.
And we had Todd in the first episode, and that's not the same actor.
No.
Well, it's, what? It's a different,
no,
actor.
No, that actor is definitely the same.
Okay, we will look later, and they are categorically not.
Okay, you're telling me that that Todd and the other Todd are different people?
They don't even look alike, Will.
Really?
This is Chin Todd. This is all Chin Todd.
Chin Todd!
First two series, it's Eye Todd.
What? Yeah, I feel like you're saying words right now that don't make any sense.
I'm just saying, the first two series, the guy's got big eyes. The second two series, the guy's got big chin. It's not the same guy.
How many series of this were there?
Four series.
Jesus. I mean, the fact this is a series, this already feels far too long.
There are 88 episodes of this, right? Which you think is too many.
Yep.
This is based on a book series. There are, I think, 141
Christ
books.
On a bike.
They, I go mean, to college, they go off and, you know,
see, but that I've, got, that I've got less of a problem with, because that's a progression of time. It's this thing where it's perpetually stuck in limbo, having them permanently at school when they're all already in their mid-20s and late 30s.
And it's interesting because in this they seem to have a lot of freedom, you know, that you would associate with being an adult, just like coming and going. They don't ever show any parents. There are no parents in this. It is weird on the age thing. But anyway, this is a new Todd and he's got a problem with his beeper. Yeah, he doesn't like having a beeper. And so he's getting advice from Shred, Reggie, and also his other friend who's always been in it.
Winston,
that's right. Yeah. Who I think is a good character. But he's...
He was taking the photos in the first episode.
He was the photographer in the first
episode. Now, has he changed actor?
No, he's the same actor.
Okay, right, because I thought he looked very different from the last time.
He's got shorter hair this time.
Right, okay, and he's now about 38.
He's not 38.
He looks very old. No, he looks far too old. But this is the thing, like, you know, saying like, oh, you know, he's not happy with the beeper. He has a beeper, it goes off once. He goes, oh, that's Liz. And they go, you're tied to this beeper, man. You know, it's like, you know, she calls and you go. And Reggie goes, dude, you're a pizza. Like, yeah. What the? Why are you hanging around with this idiot?
There's amazing dialogue at this point. He goes, dude, is she your babe or not your babe? And it's like they're actually inferring that she's getting like cold on him because he's been given a beeper and she tries to get in contact with him. And they say, do you want to wear a beeper the rest of your life?
Yeah.
Like, what? Well, no, because beepers are now obsolete because we all have a mobile phone at all times.
Yes.
But what on earth is wrong with having a beeper? It's such new technology to them that they feel it's like a control thing. Like he's a doctor. Only a doctor should have a beeper. And that every time she beeps him, he should come running. It's very weird.
It is really, really weird. And I mean, so he goes over there and basically they say...
No, I'm sorry. I have to mention another bit of Shred's dialogue because they do a role play of because they're trying to coach him through...
I block this out.
They're trying to coach Todd through going there and confronting her and saying that he doesn't want to wear a beeper. And... Shred plays Liz and says, you are one hectic hondo and I will always be your home slice. What does it mean? It's so much. It's like, I told you, it's like being punched in the face by the 90s.
Oh, God.
What is that?
It's ridiculous. It's utterly, utterly ridiculous. I mean, God, it makes me angry. It made me angry to see this character of Reggie.
I love the character of Reggie so much. But yeah, they coach him through. And then Todd goes to Liz and has a confrontation scene, except it doesn't go the way he wants because he goes there to lay down the law and say, I'm not going to wear this beeper. And she just breaks up with him.
Yes, she does. And she goes, I love this. She goes, we've been growing apart for a while. We have nothing in common. And he goes, what do you mean we have nothing in common? We both like cereal, which is the one thing in his eye line that's not her.
I just have to say, we didn't talk much about Liz because we were going to get to the B-plot in the first episode and then we forgot all about it.
Yes.
And the B-plot there is basically that they've put up a picture of the
principal
who's bald, making fun of him. And then when he takes it down, they accuse him of censorship. They get righteous. They all get on their high horses. And then the principal relents. And I just have no idea why that they thought, oh yeah, you know what, if you are a teacher, your students should have divine rights to absolutely rinse them.
Yeah.
Take the piss. Do whatever you like. But we didn't talk much about Liz, but that's her plot in that first episode. And then yeah, in this one, again, it's all about her being focused. That was about her being focused on the you know, whatever extracurriculars they do, the yearbook or whatever. This is about her being focused on her
science
project. So he is focused on this kind of relationship that they've been in for 2 years. She's focused on her science project, which is a rat or
mouse.
A mouse.
It's a mouse.
Mouse.
Not a rat.
Okay, sorry.
You're being a right Jess here. Because Jess says it's a rat that's 10 feet long, right? It's a tiny little white mouse that's in... And again, Jess shouldn't be going through other people's shit because it's in a shoebox and she goes, oh, new shoes. Flips it open and this mouse falls out on the floor.
Right, can I just stand up for Jess and say... Don't leave a shoebox with a live animal in it in the bathroom that you clearly share? Because if I saw somebody had bought new shoes, I'd think, oh, I want to see what the shoes look like.
What? That's a terrible invasion. What if it's not...
No, it isn't. They're shoes.
What if it's not shoes in there?
Well, don't leave it lying around if it's private.
What? It's in a closed box, Liz.
Okay. You think that
that's
if
like
you
opening
share...
someone's post.
No, it isn't. Opening a shoebox to see what someone's new shoes look like is not the same as opening their post.
Well, I mean, I feel like there's a betrayal of trust just to go rifling through someone else's stuff and you get everything you deserve if a mouse falls out.
She wasn't going rifling through her stuff. It's a box that's out in the open that she thought, oh, I'll just have a look what the shoes
don't,
look like.
Don't tell me that Jess wouldn't have stolen those shoes for herself. Because she's like, oh, those are Bilanci shoes.
Clearly, you have not had a sister. Because part of having sisters, especially if you happen to be fucking twins with the same size body, is that you just innately have to borrow stuff from each other.
But those are new... You're not going to steal someone's new shoes.
Right, definitely.
What?! That is the worst thing to me. Yeah, the other person hasn't even had a chance to wear them yet, and you're going to steal them. You'll break them in wrong.
I'm not saying it's good, and you should ask permission. And sometimes the fact that it's new does bother people. But if you are sisters, you do go, oh, what you got?
I'm going to speak to your sister and find out, and she's going to tell me that you've done this before, and she was bothered the hell by it.
I've never been that into clothes. So I don't think I will have borrowed her stuff. I know I borrowed stuff, like, with her permission. But I don't... We didn't do it a lot. I'm not a big clothes person.
You can't just take someone's new shoes.
She didn't. She wanted to have a look at them so that she would know whether she was going to steal them.
But then you go, hey, I saw you got some new shoes. Let's have a look. Give us a twirl. Do you mind if I borrow them sometime?
What?
That's what you do if you wanted to know what someone's new shoes
are
like.
Give us a twirl? That's the century you living in.
It's a thing people say.
No, it isn't. It's a thing people say in, like, you know, 60s TV shows. Oh, give us a twirl. Oh, don't you look lovely? Oh, that's so nice. You should wear it to the hop.
Hop? No, anyway, right. So we've got this whole thing where this mouse is now loose in the house. Liz comes to Jess for some comfort and some support.
Oh, I love this
not
interaction.
Not for her shoes to be stolen.
Never shut up about shoes, for fuck's sake.
And says, oh, you know, we broke up and I don't know what to do. And Jess gives her the best advice in the world.
Amazing advice. Because she's like, I bet he got angry. And then he said that it was his idea. And she's like, yes, how did you know? And she's like, they are all the same. Which is so classic Jess.
Yes.
She's like, men, I know, they're all the same.
And she terms it the Jake Reynolds reaction.
I love the Jake Reynolds reaction.
I mean, I love it as well. It's such a fantastic sequence of steps that they go through.
It's like the stages of grief, isn't it?
It starts off as that because it's denial.
Denial, anger.
Anger, trying to apologise to her, trying to win her back. Depression. I'm like, what are you putting this poor kid through? Just tell him no at one of the earlier stages.
Well, she tells you. She says it made dating his best friend really difficult.
Oh, my God.
They make Jess the punchline here, which I think is a shame, actually, because I think the fact that you've got two women who are different, you don't have to pit one against the other. And it's clear that, I'm guessing, I haven't read the books, but I'm guessing that that's how they were written, is they are just different.
Right.
And they just go about their lives. But whoever made the TV show was like, well, clearly there's got to be one that's good and does things right. And the one that, you know, likes boys and doesn't like school so much has got to be in the wrong and will just, you know, castigate all her choices. And I think so that they make her the punchline here. And I think they're doing that more in these later series than they were at the beginning. I think it's a shame because I think actually it's okay if she's had more experience dating people. You know, that Liz has been in a relationship with Todd for 2 years. We're told, you know, Winston says, oh, I think they're like Romeo and Juliet or Antony and Cleopatra.
Yeah, both couples in which famously they both died.
Yes, although Shred adds like Shaggy and Scooby,
yeah.
Which I love that reading because Shaggy definitely fucked that dog.
No, he didn't, Liz. No, he didn't. They did not get high and fuck one night, right?
They're very much a couple. Yeah. Very much a couple.
So what is Scrappy in this?
Oh, I don't want to go there.
Well, that, yeah, you used to open up this can of worms.
He's just like a cousin, isn't he?
I don't know.
I don't think he's involved.
He's not an offspring of Scooby?
No, he's not. It's not Scooby Sam, is he?
I'm not the one suggesting that Shaggy and Scooby have fucked each other, Liz. That's you.
I was just joking. That's on you. I was just joking. And then you went to Scrappy Scooby's son and the, you know, Shaggy fathered him. I don't know how that... That doesn't work. Wow. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
But a Scooby fucked a female dog and made a Scrappy? I don't think that happened. I think he's a cousin.
His cousin. I mean, he has cousins that turn up in other bits in Scooby-Doo.
No, that's just him dressed up.
No, he does have cousins.
Does he?
Yes, he does.
Are you sure he doesn't just dress up?
No, it's two dogs on screen at the same time. It's not just... Christ's sake, no, I can tell the difference between Scooby-Doo and Scooby-Doo dressed up and a different dog. There's like a grey Great Dane with a fishing hat who sounds all yokely. He turns up as like one of Scooby's cousins.
Okay,
I'm going to find that photo. I'm going to put it up on social media. That's definitely our thing.
Anyway, Jess has a poster for Shaggy, Mr. Bombastic.
Yes, I clocked that as well. That's...
It's just the 90s just getting you again. I mean, we haven't talked about the fashion choices. I talked about how much I love a front zip, but we haven't talked about the fashion choices generally because they are wonderful. There's a lot of midriffs going on,
yeah,
which I was a big, like, I was a big envier of. I've always been kind of a chunky lass, and a midriff has never seemed obtainable to me. So the fact that they're just regularly rocking a bare midriff, I thought was amazing for them. I loved it.
A lot of stonewashed flared jeans as well.
Straight jeans, surely.
Well, straight jeans with a bit of a boot cut. Bit of a boot cut.
A boot cut is not a flare. It's a small kind of a flare.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that now every jean is skinny does not mean that they are wearing flares when they wear a pair of straight jeans.
Another big thing, and you see Winston wearing a lot of bowling shirts. That was another big 90s thing. A lot of bowling shirts.
Yeah.
A lot of 50s style clothing coming back and all kind of... I mean, even Reggie's wearing his... horrible mashup of, you know, check shirt, t-shirt, three-quarter length shorts, you know, leather hat.
I saw you wear that the other day.
No,
apart from the
didn't.
Leather hat, you wear that all the time.
Anyway.
The bucket hats really make it, though.
The bucket
and
hats.
And the, like, lace, like a boot lace necklace with just a shell on it.
Yeah.
Puka
shell necklaces, that's a big 90s
thing.
He
didn't go whole puka shell, it's just the single shell.
Yeah.
He hadn't got all the way there yet.
Which maybe is worse, the single, like a shark tooth necklace.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, God, terrible thing.
So, yeah, Jess isn't not very helpful to Liz. What happens?
There's a weird exterminator turn. I mean, this whole subplot is basically a whole weird exterminator turning up to get the mouse. I mean, the subplot for this one is basically nothing. There's no point having it in this.
Well, I guess they're giving Jess something to do. Because obviously there's a lot of Liz stuff. Liz is splitting up with her boyfriend who she's been with for 2 years, the whole entire run of the series, and has lost her mouse for the science project, which was just left out in a shoebox, and now it's gone. So they give something Jess to do, which is hire an exterminator, be rude to his face... by calling him a creepy old guy, and then she's potentially going to kill the mouse, which I think even as soon as I saw the exterminator, I was like, that mouse isn't going to die.
I mean, no, this is the thing. What for me was the thinnest subplot ever.
Yeah.
Is when they're talking about that's for our science project. Like, they couldn't even go to the effort of explaining what the science project was.
No, they were observing its behaviour.
Right. They're like, oh, he's come out with 24-hour isolation. So you've stuck that mouse in a box for 24 hours.
Yeah.
In a bathroom, isolating him.
It's not dead. You're supposed to feed and water them.
Exactly.
There's no water in there.
No, it's just
a little bit of shavings.
This is just a terrible... Like, what... And like, oh... And when they're like, oh, we lost the mouse, like, that's going to be an F for us then. I mean, what was your assignment? What were you supposed to be doing?
I don't know, but American school is weird. None of this stuff seems that out of bounds for me.
It's really weird. Anyway, so Todd goes over to the house while they're looking for the mouse to get his stuff back.
Because he wants to get back with Liz, desperately.
Yes.
And so using the stuff, wanting his CDs and whatever, is just a pretext, really.
Yeah.
But Liz takes it very literally. She's much more involved in the hunt for the mouse, so she won't open the door very wide in case the mouse gets out. So she's like peering through the door. He's very offended by this.
He is, because you keep shutting the door behind her very quickly, which you would do.
Yeah. Which I also would do when he kept ringing the bell. Like, it's like, call the police. This guy's not going. He wants his Green Day CD and whatever other CD, if it is Pearl Jam. And she gives it all back to him in a cardboard box, as is the trope, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've never done this. I've never done a box full of...
No.
stuff. Maybe a carrier bag with a...
some clothes in or something.
Maybe a carrier bag with a hoodie in. But anyway, so he gives it all back and then he goes to find his friends again and Reggie goes, "You got the box!"
That's downright frosty!
Amazing!
Oh my god. And then Winston suggests, oh, you know, you should just, we all just hang out at Reggie's place. And Reggie goes, yeah, great idea, excellent idea, Winston. Serious duding.
Yes.
Like, why does anyone hang around with this character? I want to punch him in the face, Liz.
I just
want to punch him in the
face.
Felt
pure joy at all these phrases.
Right, but they get to his place, okay, and he's making them watch Cops.
Yeah.
They watched 13 straight episodes of Cops. He's like, do you get what it is now? Yeah, it's cops arresting ordinary people. Yes. And then,
but imagine watching 13 episodes of Cops. Someone saying to you, do you get what it's about?
Imagine watching 13 episodes of Cops where the TV and the sofa are like a 170 degree angle from each other.
Now.
That's horrendous, Liz. No one can live like that.
Things we used to put up with in the olden days, because have you never had a room where you could only get the antenna to work in a certain place?
Yes, I have. And you know what I did to do that? I moved the rest of the furniture. There's no point if you can't look at the TV when it's on. If you're having to use a mirror to watch everything, that's pointless. Move your room around, you lazy stoner fuck. Unbelievable. So then after this, they basically get a montage of them playing guitar incredibly badly,
yep,
playing Mortal Kombat incredibly badly, and the thing that disturbed me most of all, some like Rock'em Sock'em nuns.
Yes, the nuns that do the punching.
I've never, like, you say that like that's a thing.
Yeah. The little punchy hand that comes out. And you've got like a squeezy thing and it punches really quick.
I've never seen this before.
And you've so, never seen that before?
No, I've never seen it before. I've never seen one that are nuns before.
Have you seen another thing of that?
No.
What?
No, I haven't.
I think they do them in like, no, is it always nuns? I don't know.
Is it always nuns?
It's always the nuns, isn't it?
Oh dear.
Can I just mention that I wrote down in my notes, Mortal Kombat?
Yes.
Which means that I correctly ID'd that video game.
Excellent. Did you spell it correctly? Yes, you did. Oh my god, you put the K in at the start.
I'm learning. You've taught me things.
Yes.
I nearly wrote down Street Fighter, and then I thought, no, because I've seen the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, and I don't recognise the characters on screen. So I wrote down...
No one on screen looks like Raoul Julia.
Mortal Kombat. See, there you go. I'm learning.
Amazing. I mean, so this is... So that's it. So basically, that he's there, like, he's moved into Reggie's house. He's taken on Reggie's clothes.
He's sort of becoming him. That's that plot line, isn't it? That's what's going on down there.
And Reggie kind of resolves this by, like, getting him to play basketball again. And...
Which is his thing. So it's like getting him back to... Yeah, because he's like supposed to be kind of a jock.
Right.
A kind of all-star on the, you know, basketball team, whatever. So Reggie pretends that he wants help doing a... whatever shot that was they called it, I don't know.
A layup.
And thank you. And so that gets him back kind of on track.
Yeah.
But we don't get a resolution of his and Liz's relationship in this episode because that's an ongoing thing.
Right, okay.
But that's enough that he's not going to be playing Mortal Kombat and hanging out at Reggie's all the time. The other thing with the mouse.
Yes.
I enjoy, like, they're obviously like scratching around for a Jess scene to put in.
Oh.
So Jess buys another mouse at a pet shop.
Yeah.
Now, was that a white mouse?
No.
It wasn't, was it?
It wasn't, it was grey.
So she throws it in, the mouse, throws it in the shoebox.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to believe that she throws it in with the receipt.
Yes.
But so whoever sold her that mouse opened up the little plastic box, put the mouse in, and put the receipt in with it, right?
Yeah.
So, now, a mouse will shred paper, famously. So they said, do you want a receipt? Yep. Put it in with the mouse.
I'm going to say, Liz, that's an excellent plan if you're a pet shop runner. Because it means no one can ever bring that mouse back.
No one's bringing that mouse back.
Have you got the receipt? The mouse ate it. That's your problem, mate, not mine.
Yeah, fair enough.
You should have known better. Then you should have taken that receipt straight out of there.
You should have really seen that I was putting it in with the mouse.
Yeah, exactly.
And said to yourself, that's not a good
thing. That's on you, not me.
So we're supposed to believe that Jess throws that into the mouse into the shoebox with this receipt, and that's how Liz picks up on the fact that this isn't her mouse, not the fact that her mouse was a different colour. Now, she's supposed to be the intellectual one, remember?
Yep. Yep, it's appalling. It's absolutely terrible. The bit of resolution for me in this, though, is when she comes clean that Jess comes clean that Beethoven might be dead because she hired an exterminator.
Mm.
And Liz goes, "You paid money to have Beethoven killed?" And she goes, "Not much. I had a coupon." Like, as if that's the problem with
it. I love it. I love it. Again, Jess is kind of the punchline here, but it's a great...
That's a great little bit of dialogue.
It makes me laugh.
But it's all fine, though, because they find Beethoven in the end in Jess's bed.
Yeah, and so she's like, "Oh, what did I pay an exterminator for if the Beethoven didn't get killed?"
And Liz just goes, "Well, you know what they say, when you've got a mouse, you've got mice."
Well, no, not if it's one that's loose, that you got out of a shoebox.
Yeah.
That doesn't follow.
No, where's the rest of these mice going to come? They're not drawn to each other.
Maybe they are. Maybe that's what they're saying. They're drawn. As soon as Beethoven was loose, all the neighbourhood mice went, "We hear him. We smell him."
No, maybe the other neighbourhood mice were like, "He's trapped. We've got to spring him from that cardboard cage."
No, but they didn't spring him. Jess sprung him when she thought his shoes.
But maybe that's why the other mice have come into the house and they were laying their trap, laying the groundwork for their plot to come to fruition when they didn't count on the fact that Jess would go rifling through her sister's shit to try and steal a pair of shoes.
There's an amazing reaction shot of Jess as well when she realises that there may be more.
Oh, God.
Again, it's the eyebrow work for me. I'm so into the arched eyebrow.
Solid eyebrow work. Solid eyebrow work from Jess.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there we are. So that was Sweet Valley High. Liz, how do you like me now?
I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. I had a kind of memory that I'd watched this because it was like the best thing on and that I didn't really like it because I didn't really gel with either of the twins that much, you know? I wanted to like them more than I actually did. But watching it now, I think it almost feels, because they are from a book, it almost feels like these are characters who exist, but they're being done dirty by their own plot lines in this show. And so I enjoyed it more than I thought. And I loved watching Reggie and all his 90s. To be that peak 90s, to do that much of a kind of dude is, you know, I loved it.
See, now, I've got to say, a few problems with this. If you're going to give me something that's set in a high school, give me more high school. Right? Don't just have it as like, "Oh, it's set in a high school, but no one ever goes, and there's no teachers, no parents, and, you know, it's just..." And again, these, like, have a subplot, but have a decent resolution for things. You know, there's going to be a reason for all this stuff. Otherwise, it's just like, here's just a way to... Here's a vehicle for some product placement, some 90s catchphrases, and some fashion. And again, stop casting people who are quite clearly in their 30s to play teenagers.
They're not that old. You're really over-exaggerating
that. Nope, they look really old.
Everybody watches Grease, right? And those people are, like, fat and middle-aged, like, you know, middle-aged spread, right?
But that's the 50s. No one looked good in the 50s, Liz.
That wasn't the 50s.
So it was set in the 50s.
Oh, anyway, if you can watch Grease, which people do all the time, then you can watch this, where they're about 5 years older than they should be.
Drive 15.
Well, there no we are. Way! I will show you their ages on IMDb. I will IMDb that shit, and you are wrong. They're only slightly older.
Okay, well, there we are. Liz, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will be back soon.
If you like grainy, out-of-focus shots of the type of stuff we watch, follow us on Insta at HowDoYouLikeMe. And if you want even more piss-poor attempts at engagement, try out our Twitter at HDYLMN1. It's like a postcode, but longer and harder to remember. And if you're a fan of the show, remember to rate, like, share, subscribe, whatever. And if you didn't like the show, come find me on social media, you coward!
This is a Standard Nerds podcast.